Welcome to the Geriatric Journal Club, featuring practical discussions on the front line of PALTC issues that you wrestle with every day. This week's Geriatric Journal Club is a joint presentation of the Florida Journal Club and the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care. References for this podcast and links to previous recordings can be found at paltc.org/journalclub. Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us again on another Journal Club. I am Dr. Diane Sanders-Cepeda. I'll be hosting this session, and I'm going to let Dr. Zorowicz introduce himself as we get closer to time for him to speak. I want to start just by going through our state of the state. So where we are today, and I saw actually two different numbers at about over 1.9 million cases in the United States. I saw on the World Meter information page that they're stating that we're over 2 million cases. So we'll see how the numbers sort of settle out. But, you know, we know what we're seeing and the impact that it's having. There have been a couple of headlines that have come out really stating how we're doing as a whole in nursing homes that I'll talk about in a minute. If you go to the next slide, you know, this is just showing Florida. This was updated this morning. And, you know, for the state of Florida, we're over 67,000 cases, the majority of those being in Miami-Dade, who's now over 20,000 cases. Overall, though, when it comes to our nursing home population, we did see that FHCA did put out some information around where Florida was ranked, and we're ranked 26th in nursing home resident cases per thousand when they're doing the breakdown, which, given the size of our nursing home population, it's not a bad ranking. So there was some acknowledgement that Florida had a better approach than some states. You know, I do think I would like to think that it was all of the stress that we helped as our organization and partnership with other organizations, all of the pressure we put on the governor's office and things that we're still doing. But, you know, I thought that was some good news. And if you go to the next slide, this was also on the FHCA's website, where they are talking about some facts around what we're seeing with COVID-19 outbreaks in nursing homes. And they really compared some statements that came out of Brown, University of Chicago, and Harvard, just to discuss, you know, those misconceptions that we're seeing in the press. As I mentioned earlier, there was an article that came out of The Hill on, I believe it was on Monday, where they were talking about 95,000 cases in nursing homes and how nursing homes are missing the mark. I think it is really important for all of us who are practicing in a post-acute long-term care setting to understand that there are certain things that were beyond the control of our nursing facilities. You know, so when they looked at quality ratings of facility, the determination is that was not a factor in outbreaks. It was more around the location of these facilities. You know, and we have to think about the access that the facilities may have had to proper PPE. So in thinking about that, and as we are talking more about this, we need to really pay attention to, you know, to what we're doing, the positive things that we're doing, and be our own advocates. With that, I'm definitely not going to get on a soapbox. So I'm going to actually lead us into the topic that we are that we're going to talk about today, which is telehealth. And I'm going to let Dr. Zorowicz take it over from here. And Dr. Zorowicz, if you would go ahead and introduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, audience. I'm Bob Zorowicz. I am I'm the American Geriatric Society advisor to the AMA CPT editorial panel. I'm between gigs right now. Until last week, I was a senior medical director with Optum, and starting next week, I will be a regional vice president for health affairs for Humana. So I really have no conflicts as of this week. There you go, no relevant disclosures. So here's the goal for this meeting. We're going to talk about how CMS is waiving or relaxing the telehealth regulations, how CMS is encouraging the use of telehealth to allow for clinician-patient services that were previously required by face-to-face encounters. We're going to talk about the difference between what we really call telehealth, which is real-time audiovisual telecommunication services, and other forms of telecommunication. And we'll talk about the CPT and the G codes that are now being used to provide telehealth services. Lots of things have changed over the last couple of months, and the regulatory changes are coming fast and furiously. Fortunately, they've slowed down in the last couple of weeks. So hopefully this is all up to date. But anyway, retroactive to March 1st and throughout the public health emergency, CMS is paying physicians for telehealth services at the same rate as in-person visits for all diagnoses, not just services related to COVID-19. And what they're doing is they're actually paying at the non-facility rate, which is a higher rate usually than the facility rate. They've removed restrictions on geographic location, so patients can receive telehealth services in all areas of the country in all settings, including at their home. They are not enforcing a requirement that patients have an established relationship with the physician providing telehealth. They are not enforcing regulations that require cost sharing, that is copays and deductibles. So in other words, physicians can waive copays and deductibles without worrying that it's going to be enforced. And physicians licensed in one state can provide services to Medicare beneficiaries in another state, although state licensure laws still apply. So that's kind of the basis for the waiver. And I just want to mention that we do not know how long the public health emergency is going to last. Once that ends, we really have no idea among the telehealth regs, what's going to stay, what's going to change, what's going to revert to what it was beforehand. So, that remains a mystery. And I'm sure CMS is kind of working on a post-COVID strategy, although they're keeping that close to the vest. So as I mentioned, telehealth services that were previously restricted to certain zip codes can now be done anywhere. Many E&M services that previously required face-to-face encounters can be provided with telehealth technology and paid at the full rate. CMS is allowing technology that was not previously considered HIPAA compliant to be used. And they're also eliminating the frequency limitations for telehealth SNF and inpatient hospital visits that used to be in force in those zip codes where telehealth was allowed. And most interestingly, telephone services may now be provided and reimbursed. That's the most interesting and probably the most recent changes, and we'll get into that in just a moment. Next slide, please. So there are a number of telehealth modalities. When we use the word telehealth, we're usually referring to interactive real-time audio and video telecommunication systems, RAVT. And under the public health emergency, services that were not previously HIPAA compliant, like FaceTime and Skype, can be used. But this permits real-time communication between the clinician and the patient, whether at home, assisted living hospital, or nursing facility. As I mentioned, being able to use non-HIPAA compliant platforms is allowed during this public health emergency. And the HHS Office for Civil Rights is exercising their enforcement discretion and waiving penalties for the use of these platforms. So while they're not explicitly allowing the platforms, they're simply not enforcing their prohibitions against them. And keep in mind also that if a patient is unable to manage the device, whether it's an iPhone, an iPad, or a dedicated telehealth platform, a third party family member, staff member, home health nurse is going to have to facilitate the telemedicine experience between the patient and clinician by managing the technology on site. So this is really a logistic consideration in using these technologies. Next slide, please. So here is a list of some acceptable and not acceptable platforms, things like Apple FaceTime, and WhatsApp, Skype. These are very commonly used technologies for real-time audio-visual telecommunication, acceptable such as TikTok, Facebook Live, etc. So keep that in mind. But I think most folks are using either FaceTime or Skype, although there are a number of others, and there's a whole list of services that are allowable, and I gave you that link below. So can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Please just let me know if we're dropping. If I keep dropping, then I'll call in. Hopefully the sound will continue. Next slide, please. Now, it is important to get consent for telehealth services. Remember, these many of these services, like using the telephone, were previously free, not reimbursed, and patients need to know that they're going to be charged. So according to CMS, consent should be obtained at least annually, although it can be obtained at the time of the service and can be done verbally, but it must be documented. Now you can, if you're in the office and you have staff members, they can obtain and document the consent. So for instance, a staff member in the office may call a patient and say, Dr. So-and-so would like to talk with you. However, this is a chargeable service. We need your consent for that. And then if they say yes, then they can turn it over to the doctor. So there are ways of doing this. Or of course, the physician or other clinician can do it themselves. It's pretty flexible, but the consent needs to be obtained and it needs to be documented. Next slide, please. There are a number of different types of virtual visits and associated technology. We're going to talk about mainly two, which is telehealth E&M and telephone E&M. With the changes in telephone reimbursement, virtual check-ins and e-visits are probably no longer relevant, but this is a little table kind of showing you what types of technologies are acceptable for each type of service. So for telehealth E&M, one can use either real-time audiovisual telecommunications or telephone, but not other communication technology-based services like email or dedicated portals where there isn't synchronized communication. Virtual check-in, any of these works for e-visits, anything except a telephone. And then telephone, interestingly, now may be used for E&M visits. Next slide, please. So we're going to talk about telehealth services first, and we're really referring to E&M and other services that previously required a face-to-face visit. Next slide, please. So there's a whole list of evaluation and management services, which since retroactive to March 1st, CMS is now allowing to be provided through telehealth technology. And this is just the first slide listing some of these services. And I highlighted advanced care planning because we're going to touch on that briefly a little bit later. But next slide. This, I think, shows you the more relevant to post-acute and long-term care, that both all nursing facility visits and all domiciliary rest home or custodial care services may be provided for telehealth, whether the patient is new, established, or whether the patient is known to the physician. And the entire range of services can be provided. Next slide, please. So telehealth services typically provided in person will be reimbursed at the same rate as their typical location. So if you're providing a E&M service, a SNF or a nursing facility service, using telehealth technology, the documentation is exactly the same as it would have been and will be reimbursed at the same rate as if you were on site doing a face-to-face visit. As I mentioned before, CMS will not pursue administrative sanctions if the provider reduces or waives co-payments. And most interestingly, CMS is now reimbursing telephone E&M at parity with the outpatient and office services. And we'll show you those reimbursements in a little bit. Next slide, please. So a word about the place of service code. Now, normally in the nursing home, you use either 31 or 32, 31 for SNF, 32 for nursing facility, and that remains unchanged. Remember, before the public health emergency, telehealth services were submitted under place of service 02, but this would pay at a lower facility rate. During the public health emergency, we are to use the typical place of service code we would be using if we were providing that service face-to-face. So even if you're at home, in the office, in the shopping mall, if it's open, and you're performing a SNF or a nursing facility visit using those CPT codes, you would use the SNF 31 or nursing facility 32 code to indicate to CMS that the patient is in fact in the nursing facility. And you should still submit the E&M code that best describes the nature of the service, just as you would if you were face to face. You will, however, need to use modifier 95 to identify these as telehealth services so you can receive the full non-facility rate. Next slide, please. Now, I'm going to go just quickly over office codes because some of you may also be seeing patients in the office. During the public health emergency, CMS is revising their policy to specify that if you're performing an office or outpatient E&M level selection, you can use any one of three different approaches for determining the level of service. It can be the typical, two out of three, three out of three components. You can use just medical decision making, or you can use time. And any of those will be acceptable to determine the level of service. Just keep in mind that if you use time, what CMS considers total times are not the CPT typical times listed in the CPT manual. Next slide, please. This is for reference. These are the total time that CMS requires if you're using time to submit your office codes. Next slide, please. I mean, that's reference mainly. That's why I didn't go over it. Back to the nursing home. So we do get a lot of questions about the regulations for nursing home visits. So we know there are regulations, there are F tags. What has CMS had to say about these? Next slide. So as you know, there are F tags and regs that govern what has to be done in a regulatory physician visit. This has not changed. The same content applies as if you were doing it face-to-face. Next slide, please. Likewise, the frequency of visits has not changed at all. The residents must be seen by a physician at least once every 30 days for the first 90 days, at least 60 days thereafter, and the rest of those regulations are still in force, whether or not it's done face-to-face or done by any of the telehealth technologies. Next slide. What has changed, of course, is Regulation 483.30C, which requires that visits need to be done face-to-face. But this has been changed during the public health emergency, allowing visits to be conducted as appropriate via telehealth options. It's not required. You can still do your face-to-face visit, but now regulatory visits may be performed via telehealth. However, the frequency and the content of those visits remains exactly the same as it was before the public health emergency. Next slide, please. So, some suggestions for regulatory visits. I know that there are still facilities that are wrestling with the availability of PPE. I know there are physicians who are considered higher risk and for stable patients may not want to enter the room. So you may consider a doorway visit for those stable patients that may not require a physical exam. Remembering that subsequent nursing facility visits, according to CPT, require 2 out of 3 components, either with history, physical, medical decision-making. So history and medical decision-making can drive the level of service without having to perform an extensive physical. You may still want vital signs, weights, and just your visual inspection of the patient from the doorway, but this is perfectly acceptable if it is medically indicated. But regulatory visits should be compliant with the required frequency. Your visits should be documented accurately and thoroughly, just as you would face-to-face. The required content remains the same. And remember that if you are performing a telehealth visit, someone's got to handle the device, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or a dedicated telehealth device. And this can be another resident, it can be a family member, staff member, but obviously someone has to manage that device. Next slide. There are these codes for telehealth consultations, and I'm just pointing them out so you know them. I think with the relaxation in the requirements, and particularly with the parity of telephone E&M, these are probably not going to be necessary, but these G codes for telehealth consultations were present prior to the public health emergency. And these are telehealth consultations furnished to beneficiaries in hospitals or SNF via telehealth to follow up on an initial consultation or subsequent consultative visit requested by the attending physician. And this is for consultations. So if you have consultants, a dermatologist, an infectious disease specialist, who is not going to come into the building, but you want them to do a consultation, these codes are available for them to use via telehealth. Next slide, please. So just so you know, here's the comparison of the national facility price for the G codes, G406 to 408, for inpatient telehealth follow-up visits versus the nursing facility codes. And I know that a lot of consultants will just use the nursing facility codes, and they now have a choice because the nursing facility codes 99304 through 10 may now be provided via telehealth technologies. So it may not be worthwhile using the G codes, which were actually designed specifically for telehealth, because the reimbursement for nursing facility visits via telehealth is at parity with a face-to-face visit. Next slide. And here, most interestingly, is a comparison of the telephone codes 99441 through 99443, which are now at parity with the outpatient office codes. And if you compare them to the nursing facility codes, not bad. So for instance, 99441, which is a telephone E&M for 5 to 10 minutes, reimburses $46. A 99307, a nursing facility visit of subsequent, is $44.75. So they're fairly similar. Now, most of your regulatory visits, I would presume, are going to be 99308 or so, unless patients only have a single chronic disease, which is unlikely. But you can see that you now have a choice of codes that can be used for submission of the claims. But remember that the documentation still needs to be there, and whether or not you use the telephone codes or the traditional nursing facility codes for a regulatory visit, the content and the frequency remains the same as required. Next slide. So here again is a comparison of the G codes for consultation with the domiciliary rest home codes. And this is just for your reference. Next slide. and the telephone codes compared to domiciliary rest home. And, you know, it's more likely in a assisted living facility, for instance, that a patient may be able to manage a phone or an iPhone. So you may have your choice of whether you want to submit the claim with the traditional CPT codes for domiciliary rest home, or if you use telephone, the telephone codes. But as you can see, 99334, 99335 are considerably higher reimbursed than the 99441 and 99442. So again, these are choices you have to make during the public health emergency because of the flexibility in which codes can be submitted for services. Next slide. So let's talk a little bit about the telephone. This is a telephone. Very simple technology. We listen, we talk. There's no picture. Next slide. So these are the telephone codes in CPT, and particularly we're looking at the ones on the left, 99441 through 99443. Telephone evaluation and management service by a physician or other qualified healthcare professional who may report E&M services provided to an established patient, parent, or guardian, not originating from a related E&M service provided within the previous 7 days, nor leading to an E&M service or procedure within the next 24 hours. And you can see these are divided into 5 to 10 minutes, 11 to 20 minutes, 21 to 30 minutes. CMS is recognizing the descriptor exactly as written, except they are waiving the requirement that it must be for an established patient. It can be.
The success of your practice depends on a support team that knows exactly how to navigate through the many variables and nuances of post-acute medicine. Based on years of practical clinical experience, the team at U.S. Post Acute Care is dedicated to enabling you to deliver the very best quality of patient care, providing a unique complement of administrative and clinical educational support services. To learn more about what U.S. Post Acute Care can do for your practice, visit uspostacutecare.com.
So, these are used to report episodes of patient care initiated by the patient or guardian of a patient. So technically, these are supposed to be calls made by the patient to the physician. We can get around that if you have a staff member that calls the patient first and says, you know, the doctor would like to talk to you. This is not being strictly enforced during the public health emergency. But keep in mind, if it ends with a decision to actually see the patient face-to-face within 24 hours of the next available urgent visit, you cannot report the code. Or if you're planning on subsequently submitting a typical E&M code, then you can't report this code. If this telephone call refers to an E&M service performed and reported within the past 7 days, you can't report the code. So there are some caveats to using these. 99441 to 99443, sorry about that typo, is used for those who can report E&M, that's physicians and P's, PAs. And then the other codes, 98966 to 68, are for those who cannot traditionally report E&M. That really doesn't apply to the group on this call. Next slide. So again, for the duration of the public health emergency, telephone services may be used for new and established patients. The non-physician codes can be used by social workers, clinical psychologists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, etc. They have their own modifiers. In case you know any of these folks that want to use these services, they can. This may be most relevant for social workers and clinical psychologists. And as I mentioned, the reimbursement for telephone services is at parity with outpatient office services, retroactive to March 1st. Next slide. Here again are the reimbursements. These are the national rates, non-facility and facility, for both telephone E&M for physicians, which is 99441-3, and for those like the social workers and therapists, 98966-98968. Those, by the way, have not been upgraded in reimbursement. I put the virtual check-in, which is G2012. I really think that becomes irrelevant now that the telephone services are reimbursed, particularly at this rate. So I'm not even going to go over that because I don't know anybody that's using the G2012 virtual check-in anymore during the public health emergency. Next slide, please. So a couple of words about advanced care planning. Next slide. So you're all familiar with advanced care planning, and you know that we have codes to submit claims for advanced care planning, 99497 and 99498. The reimbursement remains the same. However, this may be provided via telehealth and now may be provided via telephone. Keep in mind that existing CPT descriptor and CMS guidelines still apply to providing advanced care planning services. Next slide. Okay, so tips. Think doorway visits when clinically appropriate, in which case you can submit history and medical decision making as the two out of three components for your nursing facility codes. Remember, there are other non-face-to-face services which we've always been able to provide, such as non-face-to-face prolonged services, 99358 through 99359. Make every effort to use real-time audio-video technology of any allowed type rather than audio-only or portal-only services, because I think there is still an advantage to actually being able to see the patient, even if you're not there in, face-to-face. But remember that under the public health emergency, telehealth services can be used for both new and established patients, but you will need to obtain consent and insurance info for the new patients. I do recommend that you document where you are, where the patient is. If you're in the same location, it's generally not telehealth. But since telehealth and in-person are the same reimbursement, this may not matter in practice. If you are in the same location on an inpatient nursing facility unit, but you happen to use telephone or the room intercom to get a history, our opinion is that you are still providing an in-person service. But again, because of the parity, again, it may not make a difference. And again, remember that subsequent visits require two out of three components, meaning that the physical is de-emphasized if you're using history and medical decision-making. Next slide. So again, there are a number of non-face-to-face services which have always existed. Transitional care management, that remains the same, except that that required face-to-face visit may now be done via telehealth. But other services such as chronic care management services, complex chronic care management services, behavioral health integration care management, and prolonged service without direct patient contact, these were always non-face-to-face, and they remain non-face-to-face, and they're still available to be used when clinically appropriate and appropriately documented. Next slide. So remember, you are providing important care and you're spending time doing so. So make sure that you document the service, that you're compliant with regulatory requirements, but you know, do what is medically necessary. Doorway visits, try to use real-time audio video if you can for routine E&M services. If you have to use telephone, that's fine. It can be reimbursed. You can either submit it using the E&M codes if you document the appropriate components, or submit it via the telephone codes by documenting the appropriate time. I'm not even going to talk about interprofessional consultation. That's a whole different story, which I think is going to be irrelevant for this group. Next slide. Off the unit, remember that you want to add the modifier 95 to get that non-facility rate. If you're talking to the patient using audio only, obviously you're going to use the telephone codes. If you're talking to the patient, family, doing chart review or documentation, you're spending more than 30 minutes on a single day, that's 99358. That's that non-face-to-face prolonged services. But remember that there has to be an E&M visit at some point in the future or past. It can be a telehealth visit during the public health emergency, but there has to be a submitted code for an EM visit. In that case, it's got to be one of the E&M codes, not the telephone codes. There are these teleconsult G codes, but I would not consider using those at this time. We've got too many other options with the telephone codes and the traditional E&M codes. Next slide. If you are seeing patients that are not Medicare and are on either commercial or Medicare Advantage, different carriers have their own policies. Remember that each Medicare Advantage plan must provide at least the minimum services that fee-for-service Medicare provides. So any of the waivers in the telehealth regulations during the public health emergencies have to be at least matched by other payers. However, they can go beyond that if they wish. So it behooves us to take a look at their policies because they may have some additional quirks and adjustments to those policies. Next slide. And I've given you in the slide set a whole list of references. This includes most of the CMS references as well as some AMA resources for helping you determine how you can do telehealth services and also for supporting all the information that I gave you before. There's a lot of information here. Fortunately, I haven't seen too many changes in the last couple of weeks, but from the beginning of March through now, at least until the beginning of May, and even in May, the changes were every couple of days, but I think it's kind of stabilized now. So I think what I'm telling you now is current, but keep on the lookout because you never know, there could be other changes. Next slide. All right, so that is the presentation. So I already got one question. What is the modifier for telephone service? And again, the modifier 95 should be used with all telehealth services to indicate that you're doing it via telehealth during the public health emergency. And that way you will get the non-facility reimbursement. Okay, open for questions now.
Thank you, Dr. Zorowitz. I know that we had a question that came in through our email about the opinion of our experts regarding should physicians, if they have the capability, use telehealth versus going into a facility. I think that was the overall question. And the person, I don't know if Dr. Edwards is on the call, but he was asking if it is better, if you can, for those physicians who are at higher risk, to not go into the facility, which I think you mentioned earlier. So I don't know if I made sense of that question, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there are clinical and ethical and logistical and political ramifications for that decision. I do think that physicians who are high risk need to think very seriously about whether they need to enter a facility where there is considerable COVID-19 running around. And, you know, I think they need to really talk with the medical director and the staff about what would be best for the patients. Telehealth is a perfectly acceptable option, but you do need pretty good cooperation with the nursing staff because you're going to need to get information that you would normally get face-to-face you know, not only the vital signs and weights, but how's the patient doing? How are they looking? Are they eating? Are they drinking? And with an EMR, you can get some of that from the chart, but, you know, you're going to want to chat with the nurse, or you may want to chat with the family to get a good idea of what's going on. But yeah, I mean, there's no reason you can't do it by telehealth. And I also know there are buildings that are prohibiting some physicians from coming in and making rounds, particularly on COVID units. So there you would really have no choice but to use telehealth. And then the facility really is obligated to make sure they provide you with the logistical assistance to make sure that can happen.
Yes, and so we have seen a lot of buildings here in Florida where they are doing that. They're prohibiting any clinicians from coming into the building across, you know, the board, like it, regardless of if there's a dedicated COVID-19 unit or not. I think one of the challenges that you mentioned was the fact that some facilities, and there's been a great deal of variability between county to county here in the state of Florida, some facilities have it where they are having the nurse utilize the phone or an iPad to go and make rounds, and in other cases, getting that kind of assistance in that facility has not happened. We do have a question from Sarah Norkbach. I would appreciate your thoughts on now documenting a billing for telehealth video or telephone visit for calls at night and on the weekends involving acute changes. I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, is that in the group chat or there's?
Yeah, it's in the group chat. Oh, well, no, it's in the group chat. It was sent to me directly. She said, we've always basically given this care. So how do we now document and bill for the telephone visits that we may do in the middle of the night with the facility?
Yeah. So if the facility is calling you and you're not doing a visit with the patient, that's not a E&M visit. You know, a nurse calls you and says, you know, Mr. So-and-so has a temp of 102 and, you know, it gives you additional information and you say, do this and do that. That's no different. That's not a E&M visit because you haven't had an encounter with the patient. So that's no different than it would have been. If the nurse then walks into the room with an iPhone and shows you the patient, that then becomes a telehealth visit. However, if you haven't gotten consent for it and you're billing the patient for that visit, that could be problematic, which is a good rationale for if you think you're going to be doing telehealth, it would behoove you to get consent prior. You know, you may need to call some of your patients, or if a patient is sick, get consent for doing telehealth up front, because if you do get that middle of the night call and you do a telehealth visit, you know, you're gonna wanna be able to submit the claim. But I think you gotta kind of weigh the pros and cons and the ethics of, of when a telehealth visit is really necessary. Because normally we wouldn't have run into the facility to see the patient. But now, if you can do telehealth, the nurse can run into the room and, you know, use FaceTime and say, here's the patient. And, you know, bingo, you've done a telehealth visit.
Okay. Diane, this is Joe Auslander. Can I ask Bob a question?
Yes,
Joe, you may.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Joe.
Great presentation and congratulations on your new position.
Thank you.
I'm sure these slides will be available to us. They're really invaluable. So I've heard that there's a lot of consideration about if and how to continue this, these rules because of the potential for abusing the codes.
Right.
And so do you have any thoughts or speculation about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The reason that there were so many restrictions on the use of telehealth services prior to the public health emergency was specifically because of the fear of abuse. But CMS, you know, aside from the public health emergency, they have been relaxing requirements for codes like chronic care management, complex chronic care management, transitional care management, in an effort to reduce administrative burden and to encourage the use of these services, particularly by primary care providers. So, you know, I am guessing that, you know, to some extent, some of this is going to remain available even after the public health emergency. I just don't know to what extent. I think CMS may be willing to risk some abuse to make reimbursement more available. I think their interest is mainly in primary care providers, but you know, since these codes can be used by anybody, it may open the door. But to guess, you know, what they're thinking and, you know, what types of services and what restrictions they might place on it will be after the public health emergency would be pure speculation on my part.
Yeah, if you look at the pure economics of it, you know, if you can do an adequate virtual visit, you know, we know that one of the things that prevents emergency department visits and hospitalizations is on-site visits by physicians or nurse practitioners. If you can do an adequate visit, paying whatever the fee is for that, $70 or $80, is a lot less than in the fee-for-service system paying, you know, a cost that could go above $15,000 for an episode of care. So I hope they'll look at it that way as well.
Yeah, and I do think that they have that in mind. You know, I just don't know what they'll do at some point when the public health emergency is either declared over, they'll put something out in a proposed rule, and we'll all have to spend some time reading the 250 pages and figuring out what they're thinking and send in comments. More and more, CMS has just been sort of doing what they want to do. A lot of this, you know, was done without real input from the physician community. And then they kind of adjusted as they saw what the implications in real life were. So, you know, they've been very aggressive about making changes to payer policy recently. And I think that will continue, at least under this administration. What happens if there's another administration? I don't know. There was another question in the chat box. For SNF, we cannot use SNF CPT codes for telephone service CPT codes. Actually, so let me just explain that. So the question is, in the nursing facility, we cannot use the SNF CPT codes for telephone service CPT codes. Now, so the service that you're providing is evaluation and management for a nursing facility patient. You can report that via your typical nursing facility codes, right? 99307, 08, 09, 10, right? That has to be compliant with the CPT descriptors, two out of three components for established, three out of three for new patients. However, if you have a nursing home resident that can manage a phone, and the best you can do is do it by phone, you have a choice. You can either report it via the telephone codes, or you can report it via the CPT codes for a nursing facility, let's say 99307. You're getting a history, you're doing medical decision making, you're going to document it. You've done the tweet getting the vital signs from nursing.
Dr. Zorowitz, where do you think your audio a little bit?
How the patient is. Hey, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now. I don't know if you can repeat what you just said, though.
Yeah, what I was saying essentially is that because of the relaxation in the way, the relaxation of the regs. If you perform a nursing facility visit by telephone, you can either record it via the telephone codes using time as the driver, or you can report it using the nursing facility codes 99307-0809 if you document the components, history, physical, medical decision-making according to CPT. So you can use either one. And then the question was, how long can we consider the length of this pandemic? If I knew that, I would be a billionaire.
Do we have any other questions? Dr. Zorowitz, do you have any closing comments?
I think this is opening a lot of doors. And I think as we get accustomed to doing this, if some of these waivers continue after the pandemic, I think there are going to be a lot of providers who are going to feel a lot more comfortable using these technologies. And I think then we're going to have studies, you know, showing are they effective? And as Joe said, are they reducing unnecessary hospitalizations? Are we able to save money and provide excellent care by using these technology face-to-face visits? So, but again, you know, I really have no idea what CMS has in mind. Meanwhile, you know, these are available to us. I think they should be used and used appropriately. I also want to mention that I did a presentation on telehealth for AMDA, and I believe that slide set, which is much more extensive than this one, is still available on the AMDA website, and the whole presentation may be there. So you may want to check that out, but you will have, I believe, access to these slides.
Yes, you will have access to these slides shortly, and we actually do have your full deck as well in our COVID-19 library.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, everyone, for joining and participating. And if you have any additional questions, please reach out to Dr. Zorowitz, myself. We'll make sure we look.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by U.S. Post-Acute Care.